Hey there, it's Tom Ryan, founder and CEO of ICR. Before we get into the next episode, I wanted to ask that you subscribe to the show. It'll help us get even more unique and interesting guests on the podcast, and in turn, continue to educate management teams and the growing ecosystem that creates value for fast-growing private and public companies. And while you're at it, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating. Very much appreciated.
We thrive on what's really hard. So like the most demanding environments where lots of different software all has to talk well to each other in order to deliver a good experience.
Maintaining a successful business is one thing, but real accomplishments come from pushing the boundaries and thinking big.
Where we've gravitated to over the years is customers that require multiple different types of software applications in order to deliver a commerce experience. Where we're not, if you can download a single application on an iPad and run your entire business, that's not where we go.
Being a public company can be hard. Small missteps can have outsized consequences. I'm Tom Ryan, founder and CEO of ICR, and over the last 20 years, we've helped thousands of companies understand and navigate the stock market and the media. We'll demystify these and other increasingly complex stakeholder groups so you can focus on what you do best, building your company, and unlocking your true potential. This is Welcome to the Arena. In business, there's success and there's potential. Success is nice, but true greatness lies in tapping into unseen possibilities. And today's guest has harnessed his business acumen and potential to make a lasting impact on a global scale. In January, ICR's 26th annual conference was held in Orlando, and we were lucky enough to host some of the most inspirational business leaders in the country. We wanted to share one of the amazing talks from the conference today, so this week we're featuring a fireside chat hosted by Morgan Brennan. Morgan is the co-anchor of CNBC's Closing Bell Overtime. Over the last 10 years, she's held various on-air roles with CNBC and was previously co-anchor of Squawk on the Street and Squawk Alley. She started her career at Forbes, where she was a staff writer and a reporter for the Forbes family of outlets. She went to NYU and lives in New York with her family. We're thrilled to feature her as our host today. Morgan sat down with Jared Isaacman, who is the founder of Shift4 Payments and Draken International, but he's also an accomplished pilot and an astronaut. As you can imagine, he's had a fascinating career that we all wanted to hear about, so we decided to make his interview a two-parter. Be sure to catch the second part next week. Jared's got a very long list of accomplishments, but I'm going to hand his introduction over to Morgan. Let's enter the arena with Morgan Brennan and Jared Isaacman.
I have the very distinct honor and privilege and pleasure of introducing Jared Isaacman tonight. Jared is an entrepreneur, he's a business leader, he's an accomplished pilot, and he's an astronaut. He has made significant contributions to financial technology, defense, aerospace industries. He's the founder of both Shift4 and Draken International. He founded Shift4 in 1999 at 16 years old. We're going to get into that origin story here tonight. Under his leadership as CEO, Shift4 has consistently pushed boundaries. It's developed cutting-edge payment technologies that empower businesses across countless sectors. Today, Shift4 employs over 2,500 people, processes annually over $250 billion in payments for more than 200,000 customers across the U.S. and Europe. In addition to that, he co-founded Draken International in 2012, which is a provider of tactical aviation services for all branches of the U.S. military. And in 2021, he made history, and this is how we got to know each other, by commanding Inspiration 4, the world's first all-civilian mission to orbit. That mission raised over $250 million for St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And later this year, he's going to return to space as commander of the Polaris Dawn mission, which is the first of three space flights under the Polaris program, which is a partnership with SpaceX. We have a lot to get to tonight, so I'm just going to stop reading, and I'm going to welcome to the stage Jared Isaacman. It's great to see you. Let's start with Shift 4, because it has been an incredible growth story that has taken place here over two decades with Shift 4. And I think just in terms of a little bit of background, maybe a little bit of bragging rights in terms of how strongly the company is growing and where it goes from here.
When the company was started in 1999, that was really because I hated high school and I was trying to really just figure out how to be independent and get some beer money for the weekends. But ultimately, it evolved from what was a very, very small payments company serving a local community to today. We process across North America, Europe, as mentioned, $250 billion in payment volume, and predominantly an in-venue, like entertainment venues. So about a third of the restaurants in the United States use some form of Shift 4 payment technology. So I think about 40% of the hotels, most of the sports and entertainment venues. So pretty much every football stadium, college, NFL, basketball, baseball, all the theme parks. So we've got a lot of customers in the immediate vicinity around here. And we're pretty excited because for 24 years of our history, we were exclusively in the United States. And then a few months ago, we finally closed on a very long process. Don't ever buy a European bank if you can avoid it. It's a two-year regulatory process. There's big breaks in the summer when they review the paperwork. But anyway, we finally got that done, so we're excited because we've been able to, you know, be reasonably successful in the U.S. for a really long time, and now we can take everything that's worked reasonably well again for us here in the U.S. market and bring it into Europe, Canada, and we have, you know, aspirations to go even farther. So I should say, because I know, like, space is a big part of this. Restaurants are a super important customer for Shift 4. We spend almost our entire research development budget in our products and services specifically for your industry. And then also when I was in space, the food wasn't very good. So there's a lot of opportunity for innovation in what's up, you know, as we open up this last awesome frontier.
Great. I mean, you touched on it. 16 years old, starting this company in the basement of your parents' house. I guess just give me the origins. How did you get the idea? I mean, I just think about fintech and what's evolved into. And in 1999, things looked vastly different. How did you get the idea to start this company?
I mean, everything I said before was pretty true. I mean, it was had this original basement startup, was doing computer repair and website design and such, like teenagers probably were doing at that time. And then worked at CompUSA, which was a computer wholesaler, with the idea that I was going to be able to use the foot traffic to generate leads. This is, you know, entrepreneurial spirit in early days, which so happened that one of the companies that came in was a payments company that was, they had like viruses on their network and they were trying to figure out some e-commerce thing. So I was like, there's nothing I can sell you here that's going to fix this problem, but after school I can come by and maybe help out. It got me exposure to the payments industry, which was horrible at that time period. I'm sure many of you probably know that. I mean, if you were a pizza place and wanted to, you know, accept credit cards as a form of payment, I mean, the paperwork was equivalent of a commercial mortgage. It was like hundreds of pages. Everything was outsourced, super inefficient, very painful. So we literally brought, once I had this exposure to that business, I left there 6 months later, started what became Shift 4, brought everything in-house, literally my parents' house, and that's where the journey began.
Folks that don't know, in the heart of the pandemic, 2020, you and your company were this was the first company to go public in a big IPO during the pandemic. I guess just walk me through from basement to IPO and then what this process looked like, because I'm sure it isn't how you envisioned it when you set out to take a company to the New York Stock Exchange.
It was certainly a very special moment. We never had any outside capital our first 15 years in business. Basically, the company was founded on a $10,000 gift from my grandfather, who's a lawyer who incorporated us. In his mind, I know he wasn't alive when that day came, but looked at it as, you know, if you can ring the bell in the New York Stock Exchange, you've reached the grandest arena in business. So very special moment on a number of levels. Also the fact that was June 5th, 2020. We were the first company back in the New York Stock Exchange to ring the bell. And just a couple months earlier, I mean, our customers' payment volume was down on average 80%. I mean, I think everybody can recall what March and April of 2020 looked like. So pretty scary. I mean, we were a week away from going on our roadshow just before St. Patrick's Day in March, when basically all the stay-at-home orders came out. And you're like, wait, we spent, you know, 20-some-odd years building up to this moment in time, and then you watch it potentially go to zero. But I think, you know, we were pretty fortunate. We built a model that can win in good and challenging economic times. We were growing payment volume year over year in May of 2020 and June. In fact, there were only 2 months in 2020 we didn't grow payment volume year over year, and it was March and April. So I think it was, obviously everyone knows, if we're mostly restaurants, hotels, and stadiums, that wasn't a factor of our customers somehow being immune to the realities of the pandemic. We had an opportunity to take a lot of share, and we've continued to be able to do so, and that was a pretty special milestone on the journey.
You touched on the fact that you just closed this acquisition of Finaro. You're now expanding internationally. But in general, when you think about taking share, what that looked like in 2020, how that's continued since then, what are the verticals that you see the most growth opportunities in right now?
We intentionally try and focus, well, for starters, in-venue commerce for sure. So, I mean, that's been our specialty for a long time. I mean, we do online ordering and obviously in reservations and such, but our customers generally are trying to provide an in-venue experience. And where we've gravitated to over the years is customers that require multiple different types of software applications in order to deliver a commerce experience. So like where we're not, if you can download a single application on an iPad and run your entire business, that's not where we go. Like we thrive on what's really hard. Half, more than half now, the Las Vegas Strip is our customer. So like the most demanding environments in the hospitality world where lots of different software all has to talk well to each other in order to deliver a good experience. And now the reality, like even in the smallest restaurants, I mean, when you think about, you know, whether it's Grubhub, Uber Eats, DoorDash, every delivery player, loyalty, gift, like that's lots of software that has to come together. I still think that's early days of it working well together. The more software you stack into it, the more fragile everything becomes. So, I mean, that's why we've picked the verticals we have. Hotels, tons of different revenue centers inside of them, lots of different software going in that environment. Stadiums. Now you're ordering a burger and a beer in your seat on your cell phone. There's VIP suites. I mean, you know, our stadium, the new Legion Stadium in Las Vegas, has got a nightclub in it. So lots of different software is generally where we tend to put our energies. And that's actually rather mature in the U.S. Internationally, it's still very, very early days. A lot of it is non-integrated. Like if you recall iPad Hell, when you have lots of different iPads for each delivery player, that's still very much what it's like in international markets.
So you're running this multi-billion dollar tech company, you're expanding internationally, you're growing gangbusters, and you're going to space. How did we get from fintech to space? And I think maybe it starts with a pilot's license.
Yeah, so I was waking up on my keyboard at a pretty early age, like still in the basement. But bottom line is I was kind of burning myself out. And I went back to a childhood passion of aviation. And I started flying more than 20 years ago. And super lucky that I was able to essentially have a parallel career alongside fintech. It took me through world record flying, air shows. And then I started a defense aerospace company. This is super cool. We're basically professional bad guys. So if you saw the movie Top Gun, that's who we were. We actually were flying the same airplanes they flew in the original Top Gun, A4 Skyhawks. And basically it was fighter jets as a service. You can all appreciate that. I wish we'd taken that company public. That sounds cool. But in any case,
How did you even get into a position to start a company like that and have those fighters?
So we were flying air shows during 2011-12 during sequestration, where at one point a third of all active fighter squadrons were stood down for budgetary reasons. Reality is like, I know this is going to be hard to believe, but you can actually operate certain things at lower costs than the government. And literally, they were able to get 10 fighter jets for the price of one with us totally turnkey operating. It was our planes, our pilots, our maintenance, and we were literally just professional bad guys for the Air Force, Navy, and Marine Corps. And at the time, I even remember company Christmas parties. I was like, look, in terms of aviation, this is like the second coolest it gets. The only thing that tops this is in space. And very lucky that my aviation career eventually, you know, led me to SpaceX and having the opportunity to lead that first mission to orbit.
Why didn't you take Draken public? You sold a majority stake, right?
Well, that was because I was taking Shift4 public, and there's very few that I think can juggle both. So I had to clear, I guess, some of the conflict there. But anyway, super cool business.
So then we see the intersection of Shift4 and an opportunity emerging to make history in space. How did that happen? How did that come about?
So it was very, very lucky timing. Basically, late September, October of 2020, SpaceX hadn't even restored operational capability for American astronauts to go to orbit from the United States. I mean, I don't know how much any of you follow kind of the space in, you know, industry, but for more than a decade, American astronauts went to space via Russia. So after the space shuttle was retired, we had no capability, which was a real travesty. And SpaceX had just done its demo flight in May of 2020, Demo 2, which returned that capability to the U.S. in a test. And then NASA's Crew 1, which was the first restoration of that operational capability, was November of 2020. In October of 2020, before that that mission even took place, Inspiration 4 was born. And again, I had no idea when I was talking to SpaceX at the time that there wasn't 100 other missions before us, but I found out that we were going to be the first, and that first meant it was going to be very important. There was a lot of responsibility came with it to make sure it was a very inspiring mission and that it represented more than just wealthy people going to space, but like truly inspiring people what the future could look like in space, you know, opening up that last frontier and making sure you took care of some of the real problems we have here on Earth, which is why St. Jude Children's Research Hospital was such an important part of the mission, became the largest fundraising event in their history. It raised over $250 million, and it made it possible to open up for a lot of other exciting missions to come.
What was even more incredible about Inspiration 4 was how quickly Jared and his team pulled it together. In 6 months, they planned the mission, got trained, boarded a rocket, and headed into orbit. Something that is basically unheard of in human history. Part of what facilitated the quick pacing was the efficient working relationship with SpaceX. He told us more about that collaboration and how he formulated the framework for his groundbreaking mission.
So SpaceX gave me a lot of autonomy to assemble a crew, which was awesome. And I told them right from the get-go, one, there's going to be a very important charitable component to this. And, you know, I'm going to bring people that I've never met before. And it was going to be very important that they all had a very inspiring story in their own right. It started with going with St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, so had an existing relationship with them. Any of the adventures I've been lucky enough to go on throughout my career, world record flights, air shows, always had a charitable component. This was going to be no different. And I wanted one of the crew members to be a frontline healthcare worker at St. Jude. Incredibly lucky. I mean, the stars aligned with the entire crew, but getting Haley Arsenault, who physician assistant, she was 10 years old when she was diagnosed with bone cancer. St. Jude saved her life. She wanted nothing more than to grow up and become a healthcare professional and help other kids in the fight. She got her dream job at St. Jude, and St. Jude knew that she would be perfect for our crew, and she was. And she became our medical officer. She also, and still is, the youngest American to ever go into space, which is pretty awesome. We also had Chris Zimbrowski, Air Force veteran, was actually a space camp counselor. Awesome human being, worked on some of the biggest rockets in the Air Force, then ultimately became a mission specialist on Inspiration 4. He represented our generosity seat. He just made a donation to St. Jude. We had the Super Bowl commercial back in 2020, make a donation to St. Jude, and you have like this one in a million chance. He made that donation knowing it was a good cause and probably had little chance, and obviously was a big contributor on the crew for the mission. And then there was Dr. Cyan Proctor, and that was we did a Shift 4 entrepreneurial contest, like the idea to be able to, take your business idea to the stars. And she's got an amazing story. She became the first black female pilot of a spacecraft, but she had done everything her whole life to become an astronaut. She was a runner-up in the NASA astronaut competition. She's a Civil Air Patrol major. She's a scuba instructor. I mean, she checked every box possible and came this close, never gave up on her dream. She submitted her entry into the entrepreneurial contest and won through an independent judging process and, again, became an incredible crew member, a great astronaut. So awesome crew that we pulled together. And, again, it was all in the name of Inspiration 4. You want everybody to think about that future that was up until now really just science fiction is now becoming more a reality, but also to show that it's more than just about that future that we all want to live in someday. It's also about kind of conquering some of the real challenges we have here. And that's where St. Jude came in.
Yeah. You're going back to space. Polaris Dawn is the first mission. It's later this year. Why go back to space now?
I actually didn't think we were going to go. When we came back from Inspiration 4, I thought that we had set the bar very high. I think every other commercial space mission that came to follow made inspiration and charitable contributions an important part of their mission. I think we helped inspire them to do that. We surpassed every one of our goals. Those that we established here on Earth and on-orbit objectives, we did 3 days of science and research, and we blew away again with $250 million raised for St. Jude. I thought everything was perfect. But I was invited to Starbase Texas, which is right near Brownsville, and Elon was there, and we talked about what could come after Inspiration 4, and it was a series of test and developmental missions. You know, the door is open now for all those exciting missions to follow, but now we need to build out some of those capabilities that we haven't had in 50 years since we last went to the moon. We've got to go beyond, well beyond the space station. We have to develop organic spacesuit capabilities for EVA so we can work outside of vehicles. We can walk on the moon and Mars when we eventually get there. And this appealed to my aviation background and some of the expertise I built up at Draken. And with SpaceX, we established the Polaris program. It's three incredible missions. Like you said, Morgan, the first is going to fly later this year. It'll be the farthest anyone will have gone since the last time we walked on the moon. I have two female crew members. They'll be the women that have ventured farthest from the Earth in history. We'll do a spacewalk. It's the first commercial EVA. It's the first time non-government astronauts are leaving the safety of the vehicle. And I think that's important because if you're going to have hundreds of thousands of people on the moon and Mars someday, it's not going to be the few. It's going to be the many. And we need there's a lot to learn on that. We'll communicate over Starlink constellations. And we'll do 5 days of science and research. And then we got two more missions after that. So it's going to be busy for a bit.
And EVA is, of course, talking about spacewalks right now. So I'm going to ask you a question that you've been asked on TV before, and that is, what is it like to work with SpaceX? What is it like to work with Elon Musk?
SpaceX is an incredible organization. I think we got to start there. I mean, it's 10,000 of the brightest, most highly motivated people I've ever encountered. It is a true pleasure every time to work with them. I say even I love all of my own team members, my company. That I've never seen anything like this out there. These are people, a lot of young folks, like right out of college, that believe that they can't make a bigger difference in the world than showing up for work every day. I know we'd all love to hear that from our employees, but it's pretty hard when you're if you don't have a mission and vision statement like making life multiplanetary because the world is a more interesting place when you can, dance among the stars. That's tough to compete with that, but they're incredible. And I think that's just really the point of it, though, is that it is 10,000 people. It's not one person. So you definitely have a real genius in Elon. I mean, he set out to conquer some pretty extraordinary challenges, right? Tesla, has made incredible contributions towards sustainable energy and, an environmentally friendly organization. SpaceX pioneered reusable rockets. I mean, we're all in business here. If somebody has a breakthrough technology, how long before somebody else has it? 6 months, right? I mean, the iPhone comes out, we're going to have the Android shortly thereafter. It's been like that in every aspect of technology. They first landed a rocket on a ship and reused it 8 years ago. Actually, we're going on our ninth year. They've done it more than 200 times. You know how many times anyone else has done it since? Zero. I mean, that's some pretty incredible stuff. So anyway, he set out to conquer some pretty extraordinary things, total sci-fi into reality, but it's 10,000 really amazing people that are really trying to alter the trajectory of humankind. It's amazing to just be a fly on the wall and watch it.
So you're training right now to go back to space. You're running shift four. How are you doing it? And you still fly aircrafts and do air shows from time to time. How are you managing it all? What's the secret?
Well, I have an incredible team. I have an amazing group of people that have been with us on this really awesome journey. And everybody is very motivated to wake up every day and win. And that makes life a lot easier. And then you just don't sleep as much and a lot of coffee. So that's a secret to the productivity.
Is your board on board at shift four? Do you feel like investors are on board when you do these space flights?
We have an awesome board. First of all, aviation's been part of my life for a really long time, and building two companies while growing shift four. I mean, we've grown our revenue and volume double digits every year for 24 consecutive years, even through the downturn. So we've been able to perform despite my outside distractions from time to time. And we've also won an incredible customer. Starlink is, as you know, one of our strategic customers that we're following all over the world. And that's pretty awesome, bringing internet connectivity to some pretty disconnected parts of the world. I mean, totally think, information, knowledge is foundational to solving a lot of the world's problems. And that's just one of the many things they're doing and happen to be a customer of ours. So I think the good outweighs the bad.
So whether it's as the founder and CEO of Shift 4, whether it's as someone who's been to space or any of these other endeavors, I guess the biggest lessons you've learned along the way from a leadership standpoint.
Biggest lessons from a leadership standpoint. Well, I think it always starts with yourself. To me, it's tons of self-reflection. I've been doing that my whole career of every bad decision I ever made, even the good decisions, what could have done differently for a better outcome. In fact, I've saved every email I've had, even back to when the company was first started. And I regularly will go back and reference something on a particular topic just to see how I would think about things today versus then. But that I think that reflection is very important as a leader. When something goes wrong, the first stop on figuring out why is kind of looking to yourself and what you could have done differently in that. I think that's super important because a lot of leaders, they'll look to everybody else in the room, and whether they're hotheads or otherwise, that it was somebody else's problem. And nobody generally likes to work for a jerk, right? Take responsibility, ownership, ensure accountability. I think those are all pretty important. And try and be as inspiring as you can, because as we know, it's like it's not all roses, right? It's the roller coaster has its ups and downs, and if you can always kind of point to the, you know, to the future, you know, it kind of helps you through the, I guess, the low points.
As an entrepreneur, Jared is someone who clearly thinks big and always looks to the future. Whether it's going public or testing the possibilities of groundbreaking space missions with SpaceX, Jared knows that the way to make a genuine impact is for shooting for the stars, literally. At Welcome to the Arena, we're working really hard to bring you exciting guests and great content. If you found this episode insightful, subscribe to the show on your podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. The more the show grows, the more interesting voices we can have on the podcast. And in turn, that should demystify a lot of the stakeholders around public companies and soon-to-be public companies. Thanks for listening. I want to thank Morgan and Jared for coming to our conference and for this super interesting conversation. But there's more to come next week, and you do not want to miss it. In the second half of the interview, Morgan talks to Jared about his upcoming missions, both on Earth and in space. It's an incredible conversation, so make sure you catch it. This is Tom Ryan. We'll see you next time back in the arena.
References to specific stocks are not intended to be recommendations for specific trading behavior. Comments presented on this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only, and do not represent opinions or recommendations on whether to buy, sell, or hold shares of a particular stock. All investors are advised to conduct their own independent research into individual stocks before making a trading decision. In addition, investors are advised that past stock performance is no guarantee of future price performance.